At midnight, April 1st, 2015, the thunder of warplanes, accompanied by massive explosions, woke the children of Yemen. Saudi Arabia had initiated a war against Yemen, which, as claimed by the Saudi ambassador to Washington, Adel Al-Jubeir, sought to re-establish the legitimacy of deposed Yemeni president Abd Rabbu Mansur Hadi, and also to prevent the Ansarullah movement from dominating the Arab Peninsula country. The sudden invasion, which took place after receiving a green light from the United States and Britain, was the most visible and blatant instance of the Saudi regime's interference in the fate of the Yemeni people over recent years. An overt war waged after al-Saud's ever-duplicitous goals and policies had been met with defeat. But what had taken place within Yemen's political environment that had forced foreign powers to undertake all but open military invasion to change the balance of power in Yemen and secure their aims? How had Ansarullah transformed from a small group to such power that Saudi Arabia contravened international law, acting preemptively to preserve the interests of itself, as well as those of its Persian Gulf allies? These questions can be answered with reference to a decade of tension in Yemen's political atmosphere, which featured barbaric acts such as the Six-Fold Wars, which the incumbent government unleashed upon the Ansarullah, the consequence of which gave Ansarullah greater sophistication and experience by the day. This chronicle dates back some 20 years. On May 22, 1990, the Republic of Yemen was born out of the union between North and South Yemen, and Ali Abdullah Saleh, the president of the former country, was officially sworn in as the new nation's head of state. However, his discriminatory policies led to discontent among the people and leaders of the South, as well as numerous tensions and crises, eventually causing a civil war in 1994. The war, which is viewed by some as a war of unification and by others as a war of separation, went on for 2 months. During the war, the central government massacred the people of the South and destroyed the area's facilities and infrastructures, enjoying the jurisprudential and spiritual support of Yemen's Muslim Brotherhood, also known as the Reform Movement, and having received the requisite go-aheads and fatwas of the muftis affiliated to the Brotherhood to accuse the southerners of apostasy. Soon after, on July 7, 1994, Saleh's government conquered Aden, defeating the movement of the south, forcing its leaders to flee.
It was then that the northerners started establishing dominance over the southerners. They saw it fit to gain dominance over everything, and Ali Abdullah Saleh managed to fully demolish the south and completely expand his control there.
Saleh embarked on many things. He assumed control of many power centers and spent a lot of money on them.
Of course, these things were not Saleh's doing alone. These were done by the coalition of politicians from his family in Sanhan and Abdullah ibn Hussein al-Ahmaz's family in Hashid.
Saudi Arabia's interference in Yemen continued in a direct manner. For instance, it was Saudi Arabia which always supported Ali Mohsen al-Ahmar, and it was the kingdom which helped him rise to his military authority.
Having wearing their inroads and after attaining control over the situation, they, especially al-Ahmar, were seeking to become the main puppeteers in Yemen.
Wealth was drawn around these people and the hypocrites around them, and the country turned into an area of ransacking and plunder.
And following Saleh's victory, he was faced with the demand to form a national unity government. The formation of such government would appease the losers of the war. The winners, however, rejected the proposal.
One of those severely insisting upon national unity was Sayyid Badruddin al-Houthi, the leader of Zaydi Houthis,
who was a great erudite belonging to the city of Houth, south of the Sa'ada Governorate. He is one of the pillars of the Zaydi sect.
Sayyid Badruddin is one of the Zaydi sect's prominent scholars and jurisprudents. He's also the father of Sayyid Hussein al-Houthi, and the current leader of the Houthi movement is Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi.
And they conspired against the brothers, whom they considered to be their opponents and real enemies, though those brothers were the followers of the House of Muhammad, the Zaydi sect and the noble people from the Faus, and much oppression and torture was brought about.
It had been going on for a while that some of those around Saleh, who had supported him in the war, were throwing tantrums. They were subjects of the ideology of the Muslim Brotherhood, and this was an element which was a potential threat to Saleh's government in the long run. From Saleh's perspective, Zaydis were the only people whom he could pit against the Brotherhood, should he see fit.
And since Saleh knew this fact, he resorted to the divide and rule policy, which was being used by Britain at the time. He called the policy dancing on the heads of snakes, through which he would support one side against the other, and in most cases, support both of the sides.
In 1993, the Zaydis, who included a group of scholars, among whom were Sayyid Majduddin Muhammad al-Mu'ayyidi and Sayyid Badruddin al-Houthi, and who mostly resided in the Sa'dar Governorate, created the Al-Haq Islamic Party. It is clear that Saleh's policy at the time was to accommodate developments of this type, and institutions like the Al-Haq Party were able to stand in the face of extremist and radical ideologies in Yemen, including Al-Qaeda. This was a plus for Saleh's government, which was under pressure from the United States to confront Al-Qaeda.
The party, however, roused the opposition on matters of religious emulation by embarking on innovation and being influenced by the revolution of Imam Khomeini. In other words, they mobilized, while those sources of emulation merely espoused jurisprudence, scholarship, and things of that nature.
Therefore, a rift came about between the conservatives and the open-minded. The former comprised the Zaydi scholars and the elder ones, while the latter was led by Mohammed Azan.
But for how long could this go on? There was need for a moderate point of view to converge the two lines of thought and prevent further division and unease. Hussein al-Houthi, a like-minded friend of Azan's, who maintained a moderate position, undertook to do this while engaging in political activity. Sayyid Hussein started to write and propagate his ideology, especially among the young generation.
Hussein al-Houthi was a parliamentarian, a strong personality who maintained innovative thoughts. He had a special charisma which awarded him popularity and fame among Zaydis, especially in Sa'dah.
And Sayyid Badr al-Din al-Houthi maintained a moderate position which caused everyone to find solace in him.
And this made him similar to other notable personalities, great people and religious personages, who undertook to promulgate ideology and educate people.
A time had come that oppression in Yemen had come to a head, and the country was experiencing intellectual, economic, and military invasion and war on its own soil.
After returning from Sudan, he tried to resolve the problems which had grown deeper between the open-minded and conservative movements.
He said, "This studying of yours is just for show. While you're thumbing through books, oppression has thrown its clutches over the country."
In his mind, the problem resided in divergence from the noble Quran. Hence, he started to invite people to return to the holy book.
With every policy that would be issued, he would circulate some Quranic verses and compare the meaning to the existing circumstances.
And then the ideology of revolution and change and refusal to accept the present circumstances was engendered in his mind.
Sayyid Hussein al-Houthi resided in Al-Maran, in northern Yemen, on a mountain that overlooked Saudi Arabia. He embarked upon contemplation as well as addressing and preparing the youth, who developed a strong admiration towards Sayyid and were influenced by him.
So, at that time, he created a group in Saada named Al-Shabaab Al-Mumen and adopted a number of slogans as well as political and cultural inclinations. The movement is essentially a cultural one. In other words, it maintains a cultural plan of action and perspective for its activities and presence.
Here, Haraka.
The movement rose up, devoted to the seeking of justice, and it rejected all foreign intervention as well as oppression, callousness and tyranny.
He possessed an authoritative presence in Saada. This was alarming for the central government in Sana'a and Yemen's northern neighbor, Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia was the United States' main ally in the region, a fact that had made the kingdom a source of concern for Yemen's government. Saleh was being gradually pressured to act against the Zaydis. What he did, though, was to begin suppressing the main allies of the Saudis, namely the Salafis, instead of fighting the Zaydis.
And after the events of 9/11, the relations between the US and Saudi Arabia became strained since most of the people who carried out the operation possessed Saudi passports. It was then that Saleh thought he could become the US's premier ally in the region.
Saleh tried to ally himself with the US in a coalition against terrorism.
Therefore, he speedily undertook to eradicate the Salafis, especially those who had returned from Afghanistan.
Then the time came when Saleh finally pit the Houthis against the Salafis. But things did not go according to his long-time plans. Instead of confronting and taking revenge on Wahhabis and Salafis, Hossein al-Houthi turned the confrontation into one against the United States.
He did so by declaring he would not accept that US interrogators come and interrogate Yemeni civilians.
Bush started an international war on Islam. He called it war on terrorism. Sayyid Hussein, however, denounced it as a war on Islam.
And he said the US was doing this on a global scale so that we may face a moral defeat, and that the killing of Muslims would turn into an everyday matter. He said moral defeat was more dangerous than military defeat, and therefore started to chant this slogan.
Therefore, Sayyid Hussein said he would alienate the people from the slogan of fear, and if the government became angry, he would ask them, why do you lose your temper over the US and Israel?